I'm Robert Norris, and this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. And I'm looking at the mic levels. Do we have mic levels? Can you hear me? Well, if you can't hear me, I want you to call in to 427-3772, 427 Free Radio Santa Cruz, and let me know to pump up the volume. If you can hear me, call anyway and tell me what you've got to say, because for the next 2 hours, you're going to be here with me, hopefully, listening to shows about, well, talk about civil liberties, talk about poverty rights, talk about some broader issues, too, police abuse, recent court decisions that may impact all of us. We're going to run through a whole whirlwind of stuff. You were listening a moment ago to the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, a brilliant satirical group out of Berkeley that broadcasts on Free Radio Berkeley and Free Radio San Francisco and Free Radio Santa Cruz, where you are now tuned. Well, on Friday, we had a rendition of Home Sweet Homeless in our kind of marathon show that lasted about 3 hours. Playwright Nutcracker Nick Whitehead was the host on that particular performance, which he arranged about 3 years ago and then held in the parks, a satirical play showing the kinds of political dynamics that were in effect around the earthquake. Actually, it was more of a broad send-up of what was going on at that time. That time you had Mayor John Laird, whom he called Mayor John Scared, and you had Mayor Marty Wormhout, who followed Mayor John Laird, 1989-1990, whom he called Mayor Marty Wormsnout. These two mayors and those city councils were particularly harsh on the homeless, while at the same time babbling the most obnoxious, hypocritical rhetoric about their concerns for them. Wormhout had activists arrested who sought blankets for the River Street Shelter and the Interfaith Satellite Shelter program. She had people arrested for serving free food. Laird tried to close down protest at the city council and ignore the literally hundreds of people who showed up there over the course of 3 or 4 months, very reasonably, very articulately, and sometimes angrily asking for a change in the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal, and still makes it illegal here in 1995, coming into August of 1995, still illegal to sleep outside, even on private property with the permission of the owner, with a few exceptions, such as the recent sleep in a vehicle in a church parking lot with the consent of the church, provided there are no more than 3 vehicles, or sleep in a fenced-in side yard or backyard of a house. Those are the exceptions. I think there's also, if you can get a permit from the city, good luck. That hasn't happened in some time, as far as I know. We've attempted to get permits for protests without success. We were overwhelmed with requests for insurance and security and all kinds of ridiculous, irrelevant concerns that were primarily designed to close down protest about this anti-homeless law. So anyway, Home Sweet Homeless, that was Nick Whitehead's contribution. We're going to be finishing Home Sweet Homeless this session here in the next 2 hours. Nick isn't with us. He's a working man. He's off there earning his bread and paying his rent. But he may call in if he has a chance to let us know what he thinks, or maybe we will be calling him if we can find the phone. Here it is. Okay. It's always a new experience coming into the studio. You never know where things are going to be or what's going to be working, but it's amazing, this radio station. It's really something that hopefully will spread throughout the country. Every town, every gas station should have a radio station where the community is invited to participate and doesn't have to raise huge amounts of money or kowtow to large advertisers in order to be on the air and to be heard. It's really an important aspect of democracy, the democracy that we hope someday we will have in this country and in this city. Well, we also had an interview last week with Paul Merceau. Paul Merceau is the executive director of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is the homeless sheltering program which operates in the winter in conjunction with the armory to provide essentially floor space and transportation to allow people to sleep at night legally. and get out of the cold and the rain and get away from the threat of the police and the troll busters, who, as you may know, if you're reading the papers, are apparently getting active again. There was a story last week about four youths badly beating up a homeless person, and this is not the the same beating where there was a conviction in court, where the two Gale brothers were convicted of beating four homeless men. This is a new incident, and there are numerous new incidents that I've reported over the last month and a half on this show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. So, it is important. It is important that there be recognized rights for homeless people, that they not be derogated, that they have safe places to go, and that they be able essentially to defend themselves by not having to spend all their energy avoiding the police and simply trying to cover up with a blanket at night. And for the majority of homeless people, it's still criminal to sleep outside and will continue to be criminal until there is a change in the city law, not the county law, not the state law, not the federal law, but the law controlled by the Santa Cruz City Council and its so-called progressive majority. That's a 6-1 progressive majority on the Santa Cruz City Council, which could, at a drop of the hat, change that law. They could do it actually within 72 hours if they declared it an emergency condition, and indeed, in 1990, the shelter crisis in Santa Cruz was declared an emergency by the City Council. Have they then acted to decriminalize people who are sleeping outside? No, it's still okiedom in the 30s here in Santa Cruz. In fact, things have gotten worse. Last year, as you know, they passed the downtown ordinances, laws that make it criminal to protest against the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, laws that make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk, even when you're not blocking traffic, even when you're not blocking an entrance to a building. You are apparently blocking the accumulation of profits in the downtown area. The downtown ordinances have made it worse, and the downtown ordinances are being enforced by the green-shirted, friendly Green Gremlin hosts downtown. Hosts are funded both by your money, your tax money, through the redevelopment agency, some $10,000 to $20,000, and also by forcible assessments against merchants downtown, even merchants who don't want to pay for the hosts. They get to pay for them anyway, because they're such a boon to the tourist industry and help out the local police. It's so uncomfortable to see guys with guns and batons going after homeless people. Better to see these smiling green guys with no guns but little radios telling young people and homeless people and people that don't look too picture perfect to move along when they're sitting within 10 feet of a shop window, even if that's what people in Santa Cruz have always done, even if no one is complaining, even if it's, again, a provoked confrontation that's likely to create more problems than are solved. Palmer So, I seem to stray from my subject. Palmer So is the head of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and last Friday we had him on the air. We had him on the air for about half an hour. He was discussing changes and controversies out at the River Street Campground, also known as the Open Air Shelter. That's what the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program does during the summer. They provide kind of oversight for a campground, which officially houses 75 to 100, unofficially probably somewhat more, people who can go on a drop-in basis and lay down their sleeping bag and stay there the night. But as we discussed with Paul on Friday, they can't do that in an adult status. So, for instance, they can't drink alcohol if they're there. You can't peacefully sit inside your tent and have a beer. We're not talking about getting drunk and creating problems. We're talking about simply being able to have a beer, like any adult human being should be able to have, whether she or he is homeless or not. The laws are not only prevent you from doing that in public, apparently the practices are now going to prevent you from doing that at the homeless shelter. Now, in a way, you can say, well, you know, it's the homeless shelter, they have to keep a good image up. Yeah, image is fine, but the substance of people's lives, perhaps, is even more important than images. And these issues need to be confronted, that we're dealing with adult human beings, we are not dealing with kids, we are not dealing with delinquents, we are not dealing with criminals and lunatics, to use phrases which perhaps oughtn't to be used, but are often applied to the homeless population. The latest fad in the right-wing think tanks that brought us these anti-homeless laws that we see downtown and in other cities like Santa Monica and in Berkeley, where they are suspended, by the way, are that the great majority of the homeless population are drug addicts, abusers, alcoholics, or mentally ill people. All these afraid things in quotes. A way of criminalizing, demonizing, and at the same time infantilizing the whole population of homeless people. It's kind of making them look like, well, they're not really responsible, so they don't really, they're responsible in a sense, but they don't really have, shouldn't have the whole realm and spectrum of rights which ordinary citizens should have. And this is a very dangerous situation when this kind of scapegoating, when this kind of stereotyping goes on for a segment of the population, because when it starts there, where is it going to stop? It's traditional that it's the salami approach to human rights. You slice off human rights for one segment of the population, that's the grubby segment, and you persuade the rest of the population, oh, you'll never be in that position. You're not a communist. You're not a socialist. You're not a member of the Branch Davidians. You know, you're not a member of the Nazi Party. So you can all these people, we can get rid of all these people for your security, for your safety. But it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. When they start criminalizing groups on the fringes, you can become part of the fringe tomorrow, simply by definition of the government. So here in Santa Cruz, we have to be concerning ourselves with our own local government and with the way our community treats itself, the way our community treats the poorest people in the community, and the way we respond to that treatment. How are we going to respond to injustice at a local level? Are we going to wait for the city council to take care of it? Are we going to wait for the activists to take care of it? Are we going to wait for the problem to go away? Are we going to say, well, that's life, or are we going to go hide in the bushes? All of these are solutions, obviously, that I don't have too much sympathy with, although they're solutions that people take, and often for good reason, because it's hard to be poor. We have lots of things on our minds these days, and you know, civil rights and political movements and the basic human rights of poor people seems frequently to be a cause which is, if not a lost cause, at least a cause that is not particularly uppermost in people's minds. Well, issues that Paul Meursault brought up last Friday, or that I brought up with him in our interview, Paul Meursault, head of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, the homeless sheltering program in Santa Cruz, I think there's some questions that came up that I'm going to suggest people who are out there listening to the radios, you people out there, give me your thoughts on. There's a group called the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which is soon apparently to be setting up some kind of a group, a transitional home called Community House. In theory, sounds good. Any kind of alternate housing, any kind of transitional housing sounds fine. But the problem seems to be that they want to plop this community house right down in the middle of the open-air shelter, the homeless campground at Highway 1 and Highway 9, where people essentially have the only legal place to sleep in Santa Cruz. And the danger here is that because of this little project, which will house, 30 to 60 people, and then there's nothing wrong with that if and when it happens, though the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has been bleating about this one for years and using it as an excuse to seek different kinds of funding and different kinds of waivers from the city and use in the basis for their fundraising drives, while at the same time they've kept their homeless property until 1994, last year when the city council finally they approved it. When the city council was finally approached by the Citizens Committee, they kept their property closed to homeless people frequently after November, even though the emergency shelter needs in Santa Cruz are obvious, glaring, and well acknowledged. This group was not interested in confronting the city. This group was not interested in supporting the rights of the homeless, who make up the name of their group, who are the group's raison d'être, their reason for being. So keep your eye on the Community House project out at the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program's open-air shelter. It looks like we may be seeing another quick move by the CCH to fund a program for themselves and their clients, which will, in effect, remove housing for more people than it provides housing for. Which, in fact, unfortunately, is true. The campground will allow 75 to 100 people. This new program, no more than 50 or 60. And it's, again, sounds like a sort of a case management program. It's not a place where you can drop in. So it's really going to cut out of the loop lots of people who are really transient and who really need it, because you have to sit on a waiting list to get shelter at the River Street Shelter. You have to be signed up on a waiting list to get the kind of shelter that the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program provides for other people who are taken to churches during the summer. So it's not an easy situation. Let's not make it more difficult. Now, we have other things happening, which you probably know about if you've been listening to the show. One of them is a proposed county-wide curfew. County-wide curfew, which unfortunately was passed in model form by the Criminal Justice Committee of Santa Cruz County, which is a kind of a group of bigwigs, including the DA and the police chiefs, who essentially want to establish a law that makes it illegal for young people under 18, that's where the young is defined, or perhaps more pertinently, young people who look under 18, to go out and be out after, I believe it's 10 o'clock at night on weekdays and midnight on weekends. But I'm going to double check on that. I finally found the curfew law. Here we go. I'm in this stack of papers. I want to remind you, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, in case you forgot. And it is 89.3 FM on your dial, in case you're having trouble remembering and finding us again. 89.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. And this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. It's my twice-weekly commentary and interview show, which also hopes to get input from you. And I remind you, if you want to call in, our lines are open, 427-3772. Or for those who aren't numerically inclined, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Your ticket to real input into the political process, because the true political process is you and me and our community, not the bureaucrats, not the politicians, not the police, not even the big newspapers and media. It's us making changes. And it's me getting hoarse on the radio here. Well, I was mentioning the curfew. Yeah, here we have it. I have this document in front of me, Santa Cruz County Criminal Justice Council Memorandum, dated July 18th. And it's the model countywide youth protection curfew ordinance in response to the request of the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors. And the recommendation is that the Criminal Justice Council approve the Model Countywide Youth Protection Ordinance. This was recommended on July 14th by the Juvenile Justice Task Force, which I'd never heard of until I learned about this curfew coming right up a week ago. So I'm going to read you about this curfew, but first we're going to go to the phone lines and see if anybody has any preliminary comments.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I'm glad I could speak to you live here. Time.
Sure.
I do appreciate being out in the open. I do live in a tent and private property.
If you can, try and speak up a bit, because while my voice blasts over the air, everybody else's voice gets lost in the shuffle because of our equipment.
Sure. Yeah, I'm living in a tent on private property in Santa Cruz, and I find it very healing. And it almost reminds me of what maybe the Native American Indians might have felt like, living in teepees, perhaps. And it's kind of curious that freedom is really what we're all talking about in this conversation, I think, between the homeless people and the people that have homes. And I mean, it's like ants don't have any restrictions on where they can travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think human beings should be considered more dignified than ants, if you want to put it in any kind of sense of hierarchical dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine people not being given the freedom through dignity to allow them to have the free will to choose where they want to be, as long as they're not infringing on other people. Like, I could see you couldn't set up a tent in front of a store because you're blocking the entrance to the store. It could be a problem. But if you're not in any way, you know, disturbing people.
Right. How long have you been in Santa Cruz and living in a tent?
I've been in Santa Cruz about 15 years, but I've only been in a tent about 2.5.
And was that just because you decided it was a better way of living, or because economic conditions kind of put you there, or...?
Economic conditions usually put people where they are usually, in the city anyway. And with me, even though I have part-time work, it's impossible for me to get enough money to pay $350 a month rent plus buy food. And I prefer not to be on food stamp personally. Mm-hmm. Is that a choice?
Do you find yourself kind of gravitating to a community of people who are living outdoors, or do you find that you are isolated from that community and attempt to blend in with the broader community?
I think the former. I'm definitely going out to people, searching out people that are living in a similar lifestyle, like an urban Coralie to say, visiting people who aren't even living legally, say, that to set up a certain housing scenario, which is not considered legal by the county, whatever, but they're still doing it, and they're out of far enough that they're not being bothered.
Mm-hmm. What about the police? Have you had any problems in terms of either living in your tent or simply as a citizen in the Santa Cruz area?
Actually, my personal experience with the police has been very neutral, and I don't have any negative personal experiences with the police. I wasn't involved in any particular riots or any confrontations where I might have a slanted view. But at the moment, my opinion of the police is basically fairly neutral. I don't think they're doing a terrible job, but at the same time, it's a tough job just to enforce laws that are kind of stupid anyway.
Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself in gravitating to or away from, or are you fundamentally indifferent to the kinds of protests for homeless rights, or the rights of people without houses, that have happened here in the last few years, such as the sleeping ban protests? You've heard about those?
Yeah, I was actually downtown when some people were in this sort of like covered sort of cardboard box type of housing scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fine theater, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all, especially if we have any kind of sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think life is getting too serious, and people have to keep proving that they're worth the dignity of being able to exist. And I don't think ants have to do that. I don't think dogs have to do that. And I sure don't think people should have to do that either.
Gotcha. Are there issues that you think should be raised around the right to live outside, the situation for a person who does live in a tent, that you might want to bring up now?
I just say you have to try it to really appreciate it. And I think since we're so programmed to think that we need a box to put ourselves in with electric wires running through the walls and having a buzzing refrigerator, et cetera, and that's what's really nice and normal, and that's what everyone should be forced to inhabit, I think that's kind of, you know, really not a democratic possibility. It doesn't allow for the realm of variety that I think most people throughout the ages have yearned for.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a minute. What can I call you? What's your name?
Call me Pete.
Pete? Yeah, Pete. I've heard this often said when I talk about it should be a simple right for someone to be allowed to sleep at night and not necessarily on somebody's back, front doorstep or business or in the middle of the street, but somewhere there should be legal places for people to be able to sleep. I'm told, well, look, you know, people can't afford the housing here. Why don't they move to Fresno? Why don't they move to the Central Valley? Why don't they move to places where it's cheaper? What do you say when somebody tells you that, or has anyone ever done that, told you that?
Well, people have said this is a very beautiful area, so you have to pay the price to be in a beautiful area. And my opinion is that there are state parks, and I think state parks should be public property, and I think that people that are homeless or find themselves without an abode that's considered normal should be allowed the freedom to exist there for a certain period of time, unless they're shown to be causing any kind of disturbance or lack of respect towards the land or any other inhabitants on the land. I think if we had a real true communal society in the United States and we'd really be united, then we'd appreciate everyone's dilemma that they find themselves in, and we'd look at each other as brothers and sisters, and we'd want to help each other out. So my personal opinion is, as far as going to Fresno or anywhere else, I mean, there's some beautiful places up near the Yuba River, et cetera, et cetera. They're amazing, and I wouldn't mind in a minute being there. But I do enjoy being in Santa Cruz because I have children from a former marriage that are there. So I do want to be close to them.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I find myself in these debates with people who are, of course, accusing poor people or transient people or people who like to live free, as they might say, mm-hmm. houseless people, urban nomads, some call these folks. I don't know how urban you are, but these people suck off the social services, and you are using the area, and you are creating business problems through your presence. Actually, this is not always. This is used kind of as a generic attack on poor people downtown. Plus, and they usually say, in addition to that, well, we're not talking about the good homeless people. We're talking about the troublemakers, the drunks, the panhandlers, that sort of thing. What's your reaction? Has that kind of description ever been applied to you, and what's your reaction if it has? Or to those you know it's been applied to?
Well, I'm sure it's been applied to people I've associated with, not me personally, directly. I think, first of all, whenever there's a variety of perspectives, there's going to be a variety of lifestyle choices. And in a free society, I'm not saying that,
Speak up a little if you can, Pete.
I'm not talking about an anarchistic society, just a free society where people think they have the option not to have to work, for instance. In a society where everyone sort of coerced to think that they have to work, and if they don't work, they don't do anything good, I think that's a ludicrous idea. And as far as the government taking from the government, I think the government is doing things, spending money like on military things that are not within the realm of the public's approval. And I think the money just being siphoned into private hands, corporate hands, directly from the taxpayer to them, under the illusion that they're creating something. I don't even know if they're actually creating what they're supposed to be creating. And in any event, the money's not being used for the general good of the common people, which is what most of us are. I really think that just the idea that all the cars are legal, you can park your car anywhere on the street and that's legal, but you can't park your body, I think is a ludicrous reality, and it shows the farce of the kind of lifestyle that this current day world is projecting towards us to follow.
Yeah, and in Santa Cruz, you can't park your body in your car at night, or you can be ticketed, arrested, and fined under the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban if you sleep
exactly.
in your car at night.
Exactly, so it's almost like forcing people that are, so to speak, like you said, on the fringe to get away from the main society streets and get way out in the fringe of society, which is like out in the country somewhere, and just get out of sight, and basically then this thing will be it'll continue as it is. The business community will be able to function as it wants to, and it won't have any kind of, so to speak, negative.
They won't be able to see the problems they're creating,
yeah.
or that are existing in society. Let me thank you, Pete, and kind of move on, unless you want to would you like to conclude with something here?
I really appreciate just the fact that there's free air time and that you're not pushing me. And other than that, I'd like to say thanks for the show, and I've seen you around occasionally downtown and seen your letters in various papers, and I appreciate your concern and your sincerity in trying to help people that are a little less fortunate than others.
Well, I appreciate your acknowledgement, Pete. I also encourage you to do the same in terms of writing and sharing your experiences, because the broader range of information that gets out, and the deeper the range of information that gets out, the better,
Right. I appreciate that, and I agree with you.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, Pete.
Bye.
So, that was, our first caller of the day, and thank you, Pete, for calling in. I think we may have lurking outside the studio Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, housing now expert and longtime poverty worker, poverty fighter, and a worker in poverty and poor person, and an eloquent spokesperson for different aspects of the poverty scene that I'm not that well acquainted with. So I'm going to invite her in if I can catch her with an earshot. Linda?
Find a chair out there and come on in and join us, or pull up a milk crate.
So, I was reading the countywide curfew law, and I guess it's important that people know about this, because the Santa Cruz Sentinel completely garbled the story. I talked to a reporter, he quoted me, which was nice, thank you, but he garbled what the bill is. And I'm going to give you some of the background. As specified by the Criminal Justice Council itself, who
came up with this bill. But first, another call. I'm going to try to make this one a little quicker here.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. This sounds like,
Stream of Conscience.
Stream of Conscience Charlie, yes, I recognize you.
Is Ty around? Have you seen Ty in his truck?
No, I'm here alone in the station, but is there anything you want to say to the audience generally?
Well, at this time, I'm helping Chris Jennings move.
Right, this isn't the time to do this on the air, though.
So if you hear Steve, would you have him...
Yeah, I will.
Call, let me give you a number. Can I give this number? What is it? 461.
Uh-huh. 9337. Now, you have a radio show coming on, don't you? Not a radio show. You have a television show yourself, don't you, Charlie?
Right, I do have a television show.
And what's coming up next on that show?
That's Terrence Point.
Who? What?
We're going to have issues about Terrence Point and about...
Terrence Point.
The issue of develop or not develop.
Uh-huh, okay. And that'll be when for...
I mentioned Rusty Herrera not taking a position.
And when will that be?
That will be tomorrow from 6 to 7.
And what? How do people find that station? What number is that?
Channel 72.
And that'll be 6 to 7 tomorrow, discussion of Terrence Point. Not exactly your local poverty issue, but and for those who are interested, that's there. And I will tell, if I see Ty, I'll tell...
Call this number I gave you.
Okay, try again later afternoon.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
So, again, getting back to the countywide curfew, the law that is being proposed and unfortunately is likely to hit the Board of Supervisors later in August, when the student community is away and when most people are going to be kind of unaware of this, is sitting here right in front of me. And here comes Lighthouse Linda. Hi, Linda. So let me make a little room here in the studio. This curfew law, the center of the curfew law is this. Gives you a bunch of definitions, it gives you a bunch of excuses, and then it gives you the basic core of the law, which is this. It is unlawful for an unemancipated minor, that is anybody under the age of 18 who doesn't have some legal emancipation, to tarry in any public place between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. Tarry. And now there are some exemptions. There's actually a whole list of them. If you're accompanied by your parent or guardian, if you're on an errand at the direction of your parent or guardian without detour or stop, if you're in a motor vehicle involved in interstate travel, so that immediately allows you, if you're a relatively wealthy person who's running around under the age of 18, traveling in interstate travel. And the reason they have that exemption is because this law is an obvious violation of the right to travel. And they're trying to make sure that it doesn't get overthrown on that basis. It was on that basis that the camping ban in Santa Ana down in Orange County was kicked out of court until the California Supreme Court reversed that earlier this year. Another exemption is if you're engaged in a lawful employment activity or going to or returning home from a lawful employment activity without detour or stop, acting in response to an emergency, on the sidewalk abutting the minor's residence or abutting the residence which is immediately adjacent to the minor's residence. So I guess the point is here is if you can hang around right outside your own house without getting arrested, which is nice. Returning directly home without detour or stop from a school, cultural, sport, amusement, entertainment, movie, or recreation activity, or any organized rally, demonstration, meeting, or similar activity. So this is an attempt to incorporate the rights of young people to be involved in political activity at night, as well as other kinds of activity, and that's commendable. But the basic question of why a curfew in the first place, and the significance of that kind of such a broad law, something we have to investigate and look at very carefully. Another exception to the new curfew law, which may well be voted on by Board of Supervisors within the next month, which again states it is unlawful for an unmanned minor under the age of 18 to tarry in any public place between the hours of 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. And there are two more exceptions, except while you're waiting at a train or a bus station for transportation. Notice it doesn't say bus stop. And I don't think there is such a thing as a train or bus station within the city of Santa Cruz where you'd be waiting after 11. I guess you'd be waiting at the Metro Center, but don't try waiting at a bus stop halfway to or from the Metro Center. Or if you're emancipated, in accordance with California Family Code or other applicable state law, and I guess that means you have to have a particular legal status which you have to petition for and acquire in a court. And here's Linda. What you say that takes a year to get? Give us something about this. And Linda, remember, get real close to the mic here.
Well, it's not easy to get emancipated if you're not 18. You have to show that you're self-supporting and that you've been that way for a year in most cases. And then you probably will need a lawyer to help you to prepare the papers for court if your parents aren't conveniently handy to help you.
So, So we have a prohibition against tarrying, and there's a definition of tarrying which essentially is loitering, which has been found unconstitutional, by the way, over a decade ago in the Lawson case down in Southern California, when a black guy was constantly being harassed by cops demanding he give ID when he was walking at night. They knew who he was. They'd stopped him before. He wasn't suspected of any crime, but they just wanted to stop him and harass him because he was walking in white neighborhoods. And eventually he took this case all the way to the California Supreme Court, and they said, no, loitering laws are illegal. They're too broad. They're too vague. You know, they're wrong. And they were tossed out. So loitering laws are unconstitutional. Now what we have is a tarrying law for minors. Again, you know, it's backdoor kind of stuff. Camel sticks her nose right into the tent, and pretty soon there she is at your dinner table. The enforcement procedure for this law, now this, of course, is one of the big deals, because when this curfew was discussed a week and a half ago at the Criminal Justice Council up in Scotts Valley, which is where the Criminal Justice Council meets every 2 months, the big questions that came up were, well, what are you going to do with the young people that you stop late at night? I mean, you know, maybe they're running away from home, maybe they're away from home because they don't like their parents, maybe they're out on a joyride, maybe they're just there and the parents don't care. You know, what kind of facilities are you going to, you know, put them in? I mean, are you going to, you know, lock them to the bike rack? I mean, what are you going to do, put them in the juvenile hall? I mean, we know the juvenile hall is just loaded from the rafters, and as I was saying last week, according to what I hear from Kimberly Carter, who's head of the Homeless Coalition, it's called the Above the Line Community Consortium, who's been investigating new youth services. She's been trying to fund them. She points out that the juvenile hall admits what happens there is they can put you either into one gang area or another gang area, because they have to separate juvenile hall by gangs or the people are fighting. So in essence, it's sort of a recruitment, affirmative action program for gang recruitment up there at juvenile hall, which I suppose is a form of opportunity for young people and may give the, you know, the yuppie youth sort of a new kind of contact with minority and impoverished youth here in Santa Cruz. So maybe I shouldn't really be so hard on the curfew, but it does sound kind of like a radical approach. What do you think, Linda?
Well, I think it's just another way of abusing children because they don't have any political power in the community and in this part of the world.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean,
and from what I hear from children, including someone related to, about the food in the group homes, it's not going to be a hip or hit. It's not going to be in any way something that people aspire to as a way to get off the street. It's like jail with less
rights. What do you think of the curfew? And we're going to be giving you more details about it. You're going to be hearing and reading more about it in the newspapers. Our phone number here is 427-3772. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. We have open lines. We'd like to hear from you. Particularly, we'd like to hear from you if you support this curfew, or if you think possibly that people need this kind of curfew, or if you've been in the cities where this kind of curfew has successfully worked to lower crime, or if you have a gut feeling you think it's an issue that maybe, you know, we shouldn't dismiss so quickly. Let us hear from you, too. I mean, of course, if you oppose the curfew, we want to hear from you on that. But both of us oppose the curfew pretty militantly, I think, and so it would be good if we could get some alternate opinion here, if that's what's out there. But if you have, you know, whatever you got to say, give us a call, 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Maybe one of the police chiefs that are helping to try to coordinate this effort, Robert, will give your show a call. I can't imagine anybody that's been young lately supporting it. I don't know how young people who are crowded at home are going to get around this. To me, it looks like just another plank in this national program to criminalize poor people. You know, it's like people that have a little money can get out of the way when they see the police coming. It's people that are down to a quarter or less that are going to be snagged by this kind of legislation. Of course, I have trouble understanding why people use laws to try to manipulate a social problem in the first place.
Yeah, although I think I may take issue with you here, Linda, because it seems to me that the people who are going to run from this are going to be the poor people. They're going to try to hide when this one comes down, whereas the people that are going to get caught are not going to be the criminals. They're not going to be the people who are engaging in behavior that's illegal or destructive, even, you know, graffiti, if you want to consider that to be criminal form of behavior. I guess in some cases it's certainly vandalism, but in others it's a form of free expression. The people who are going to be caught up are going to be young people who are unwilling to give up their rights, or, as you say, Linda, who are naive. So the people who are really it's intended to catch, I don't think it's going to catch. At least I'd like to hear an argument, a clearer argument based on enforcement. And in fact, that issue was raised at the Criminal Justice Council that the law is working just swell in San Jose. And, there have been some stories done about it in the Mercury News. Actually, there are critics who claim it ain't working swell in San Jose. And we've discussed that on this show, that the prime time for criminal behavior between youth is 3 to 6 in the afternoon. It is not during curfew hours, 11 to 5, 11 p.m. to 5 a.m., and alternately that the crime rate is going up in the daytime hours, and the kinds of stops are disproportionately being made of Hispanic and black youth and not so much white youth. You want to say anything about this?
Yeah, I think it's a whole different situation in San Jose. There are places that young people can be in the afternoon, in the evening, and even at night. I have a daughter who lives in San Jose right now, and she says you don't see homeless people hanging around, for example. There are a sufficient number, not that I support this as a real solution, but there are a sufficient number of emergency shelters to house all of the homeless population in San Jose who want overnight shelter, including young people. They're not excluded, like teenage boys are here, from any sort of family shelters.
Yeah, I think I hadn't heard that specifically, but if that's true, that's certainly a significant distinction. Again, returning to the text of the countywide curfew being proposed for our county, an attempt to kind of make it uniform. I think they're going to try to get all the city jurisdictions, that's Scotts Valley, Watsonville, Santa Cruz, and Capitola, to make their curfew laws the same, so that, you know, it's a uniform situation that will not confuse a poor youth who leaves Capitola city limits and walks into the unincorporated area. But
is that their reason, Robert?
Well, I think they want a countywide curfew.
Why? Why do they want it unified? Why do they want every city and every unincorporated part of the county to be the same when it comes to young people?
Well, I think we need to interview the minds who designed this. In fact, we could probably call Betty, who is the woman hired by the Criminal Justice Council. We had her on an interview about a week and a half ago to discuss this in more detail. Perhaps we will. My understanding is that the county has no curfew, and one supervisor in particular in the county wanted this curfew to take effect.
Which one, Robert?
I think it's Ray...
Bellegarde?
I believe so. I don't want to slander any of these supervisors or misread them. I'm not quite sure. The enforcement procedure, getting back to the text of the curfew law, and this, of course, is the key. I mean, once you tell people, okay, 11 to 5, you got to be out of here unless you're, accompanied by your parent. No, no parent there. Do you have a note from your mom? No, you don't have a note. Are you in a motor vehicle headed for another state? Nah. Coming back from your job? Well, no, apparently not. And without detour or stop, why have you paused here to have a Coke? Don't sit down on the sidewalk, certainly. That would be a mistake. Are you acting in response to an emergency? Nah. Okay. And are you on the sidewalk next to your residence? No, you're not there. Are you returning home from an event without detour or stop? No. Are you waiting at a bus depot? No. Are you an emancipated minor? No. Okay, then what are we going to do with you is going to be the question. And the enforcement procedure that's proposed here, that the cop is supposed to ask the person's age and reason for being there, and then take no enforcement action unless they believe that no exemption happens, But then there's nothing else. What do you do? Do you take them to a youth center? Do you put them in jail? Do you give them a quick spanking? What do you do? And apparently, they're saying, well, we're going to work that one out. Well, it's something to be worked out already.
Maybe they're going to work it out the way the district attorney and the sheriff's department for the county work out their annual budget. Maybe if they can make enough criminals out of young people, then they can create enough group homes for the clientele they already have. And then they'll lighten up. I mean, if there's nothing in this in the proposed regulations that deal with it, there must be a political motive behind it. Otherwise, it would probably make sense. I think that there is a real concern in the community about what's happening to children. I've gone to SCAN in past years and said, well, where are kids supposed to be?
What is SCAN, Linda?
A Santa Cruz Action Network, a collection of progressive or allegedly progressive community people. I'm a member of SCAN. I've asked them as a group to take a position of providing something for young people. And in the worst neighborhoods in the city of Santa Cruz, they have, in fact, finally in the last year and a half, done that down in the Beach Flats and River Flats area, which affects the most densely populated part of the city. And I've seen some of the results. If you don't mind being fenced in, you get to play basketball in the evenings now, for example. That didn't happen before. So, to me, these regulations are the response to a community concern, and the exact wrong response in terms of meeting any of the needs that our children, who wouldn't be so-called tarrying if they had their needs met, it's just not going to address what's going on. There aren't things that young people can do, let alone constructive things that they can do. Now they're going to be criminalized. What, are they going to get three strikes before they even get out of high school?